This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswine.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. I want to read you something out of the book that we are going to be talking about today. The book's called Conscious Being, Awakening to Your True Nature. Now, if some of that, well, Lisa, I don't know, conscious being, awakening, I don't know what all this is. Calm down, because TJ Woodward is with us. He's the author of the book, and he's going to bring this down to the level that you understand. So let me read this from the book. It is the birthright of each and every one of us to live an awakened life. Most religious and spiritual traditions teach us that we need to adopt a certain belief system or follow some prescribed steps in order to attain a state of enlightenment. A long-held belief about awakening is that only a small number of people destined to become gurus or spiritual teachers can attain it. It is certainly true that until recent times, only a small minority of people on the planet had attained this state of full self-realization. These saints, mystics, and spiritual masters were seen as special, and they certainly were at the time. However, times are changing. We are now living in an era of rapid acceleration of the phenomenon of spiritual awakening. The truth is that awakening is absolutely available to every single human being on the planet, right here, right now. Enlightenment is our most natural state. And someone who lives that natural state, TJ Woodward. Hey, TJ, how are you?
Great, Lisa. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
So is enlightenment the same as consciousness?
Well, enlightenment, consciousness, there's a couple different meanings to the word consciousness. One is ultimate consciousness. I call it consciousness with a capital C, and that is that changeless, eternal truth that we are. Some might call it God or love or source or light. And then there's human consciousness, and that's the consciousness that is changeable. It's the human consciousness, or our ability to perceive. So in that way, enlightenment simply means that we have grown in our human consciousness and become fully aware that we are actually ultimate consciousness, that at the core of every human being, our essential nature is that source, is love, is God, is light. So hopefully that's some clarification there.
Does it also mean that we're constantly growing and changing in this, right? We don't go, okay, hey, I've reached consciousness. I'm done working for the day, right?
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
I know.
I mean, that's what I was hoping for. I was hoping someone would give me the three steps and I would attend the weekend workshops and pay my $599 or whatever it is, and I was enlightened. So that has not been my experience, and I'm sure we can talk more about that.
Yeah, because sometimes when people, you start saying these big words like consciousness and enlightenment and all of this, people get a little scared by it because they think it's long and arduous, or that it's esoteric, that it's only meant for certain people. So how do we make this accessible?
Well, thank you. And I so appreciate you offering that framework, because my intention in writing my book, Conscious Being, was to write in plain language, just like you and I are having a conversation. And I hope that came through in the part that you read. Those are the first couple of paragraphs in the book. Mm-hmm. I have often read spiritual books and really loved them, and also have found myself needing to read and reread and read paragraphs four or five times, saying, what is it they're trying to say? My intention with the book was to really write as if we're having a conversation and talk about some of these deep spiritual truths and these mystical concepts, but talk about it in everyday language, and also offer everyday scenarios so we can recognize how each of us actually can attain a state of enlightenment or connection or oneness, all these different words for this same experience.
TJ, there are two things that come up sometimes when people say, I can't really get to this state, or I can't feel, more conscious or whatever. And it is anger and being wounded.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes people just can't get either past that wound, or they can't get past the anger. Do you have any suggestions to help with either of those?
Well, I think, Lisa, I think it starts with a framework, and that is to recognize that at our essential level, or our essential nature, is enlightenment. And that's what that's the reason I opened my book with those few paragraphs, because I think it's been seen as something we need to attain or strive for. Many religious and spiritual teachings teach us that there is something inherently wrong or broken with us. Others of us have had life experience, maybe early traumas, the world happens to us, we get taught things that don't support our awakened or enlightened state. And so for me, it is about dismantling and undoing some of the beliefs, some of the structures of knowing that we've held. Anger certainly can be one of them. I find that anger is usually a strategy more than a feeling. In other words, it's a way for us to deal with some underlying feeling. For those of us who have had traumatic experiences in our life, which is almost every human, we've had some degree of separation, of trauma, of feeling alone and isolated. Really, spirituality is about dismantling and looking at all of that and allowing ourselves to move beyond our stories and our collection of ideas we have about ourselves in the world. So in terms of doing that work, I find that, you know, having a supportive spiritual community, having a place, a person that we can trust fully where we can explore and uncover some of these collection of beliefs and ideas that we've really put on top of our essential nature so that that can shine through.
And, you know, I think sometimes people think they need to hold on to that anger or have that to feel alive. Is anger driven by ego?
Yes. Yes, we can say that in a very short way. Yes, because ego, you know, I think ego is one of those words that just like, you know, consciousness and awakening and enlightenment, that have a lot of different ways people hear them. Ego is simply our collection of stories and beliefs and ideas that we carry around ourselves, about ourselves in the world. So in that framework, anger, of course, must come from ego, because spirit itself, our essential nature, that oneness, that experience of love and light, there's just no place left for anger once we experience that. So we can work with trying to get rid of the anger, or we can look at bringing ourselves more fully into alignment with our essential self, and that anger seems to dissipate. So it's really both. I would say mm-hmm. both and rather than either or.
And how do we begin to sort of change that lens through which we view the world? How do we change that?
I think most of us, the people that I've worked with, and certainly in my own life, usually there are a couple of different things that happen that bring us into even a desire for this. Because if everything's kind of going along smoothly and really we don't have any big issues in life, there's not a lot of desire for change. That's what I've seen in most of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of different things seem to happen that really begin the awakening process. One is some kind of difficult or life event that's challenging. It could be a divorce or a separation. It could be children move away. It could be the loss of a job. And that in and of itself doesn't help us to awaken, but it does allow us a window, and it allows us to ask the question, is the way I've been living the way I want to continue to live? So sometimes a tragic event or a difficulty can be that opening for us to try a new way of living. Another way that it seems to be something that is a catalyst for this kind of awakening or this change is those peak experiences that we might have, those moments either in meditation or sometimes actually doesn't even seem to come from anything we're doing, where we do have that connection. We do have that moment where we can experience the world as one. We have this intense love experience. And for most of us, that may last a few seconds or a few hours or maybe even a couple of days, but the ego does step back in. But that peak experience, as we may call it, allows us that window for us to see how we could actually live in the world. And from that comes the desire for us to do the work toward awakening.
And we are born that way, right? I mean, we come yes. into this world, these beautiful little conscious beings, if you will.
Exactly. I mean, that's really the experience. I find that when we talk about the awakened state, it's easy, as you said, to be really esoteric about it. And for me, the way I frame it is, remember a time when we were really little, when we had absolute presence and curiosity about the world. Everything was an adventure. Remember when we were really young and a day lasted forever, and life was so filled with curiosity and amazement and connection and oneness and love, really. That, to me, is the awakened state. So in that way, the spiritual path or the spiritual awakening process is about returning to, I call it the great remembering, the great remembering of our essential selves before we started collecting all these other things that we put over the top of that.
Because it does kind of attach to us and change who we are as we grow up. You have a fabulous story in the book about a little four-year-old and what happens when he has a new, I forgot if it was baby brother or sister. Can you fill us in on that a little bit?
Absolutely. This is a very powerful story. It is a friend of a friend story, so I'll preface it with that. But I had a person that used to come to Awakened Living, which is my spiritual community in San Francisco, and they came in one day to share this story. A couple friend of his had a four-year-old, and then they had a second baby. And when the baby came home and it was in the nursery, they noticed that the toddler was sneaking into the baby's room at night. So the couple was curious about what was happening, so they put up a baby monitor. And to their surprise, they recorded it, and they found out that the four-year-old was sneaking into the baby's room at night and whispering, "Please tell me about God. I'm beginning to forget." And that, to me, really does let us know that on a cellular level, we absolutely know that we have this innate connection, this innate oneness. And this four-year-old already recognized that it was beginning to slip away.
That is just phenomenal. And did they approach the four-year-old? Did they say anything to the child?
You know, that's as much of the story as I know, okay. But I would love to follow up and hear more. I mean, I just think that part of the story is such a powerful example of how each of us can actually be in the process of remembering who and what we are.
Yeah, because that's really what it is. We just have to remember what we already know.
Yes.
Pretty
absolutely.
Much. So where does religion fit into all of this as related to spirituality?
Well, I think religion has a lot of different roles. Religion, in so many ways, of course, is a way to try to create a belief system around a spiritual experience, right? So obviously, there's a lot of different religions and a lot of different ways people interpret. So in the highest and best form of religion would be helping people to reconnect with their essential nature. Most religions, not all, but most religions actually have a tendency to get more stuck in the dogma. And I think what you just said is the powerful, essential part of where religions could be, and that is recognizing that we already know. Each of us already has the answers within us. So a spiritual path or a religion would serve people well if it provided a forum for that inner exploration. But what most religions do, as we know, is base their teachings on a particular writings of a teacher or a particular book, and they say, this is the way. And when they narrow it down to the way, what happens is we start believing that the teaching is external, and then we filter it through our ego, meaning if I can figure out how to do this, I can awaken, or I can live a life filled with peace and love, when essentially we already are that, and this is really about unlearning. So I think most religions, quite frankly, most religions have it backwards.
Yeah. Wow. And if someone's saying, okay, TJ, I'm on board with this whole consciousness thing, but what do I do? How can I raise my consciousness?
Yes. Well, that is the big question, right? So I think the fundamental beginning is to recognize that it's not something we need to attain, but it's something that we already are. The reason I start with that is once we have that experience and that knowing, then the framework changes. So then it's like, what do I need to be rid of? What do I need to let go of? What do I need to question in order for me to return to this essential nature? So, one-on-one work with a spiritual counselor or coach that can help us examine, explore, and dismantle some of those stories that we've collected, a community of loving people that can hold that gentle mirror up. For me, it's about questioning, it's about exploring, it's about looking at what some of those core false beliefs are. Most people are walking around with an unconscious core false belief. The reason I call them a core false belief is at our actual core, we know we're wholeness and perfection. So a core false belief might be, I'm not good enough. And that may be an early decision we made about ourselves. And then that influences what we call reality, because we're constantly recreating our life through that lens.
Well, and it's the language that's running in our head, or what we say out loud, or what keeps, you know, repeating. So what role does language sort of have in our awakening?
I think language is so crucial because most of us are walking around, as you said, not even recognizing that there's an inner and an outer dialogue that's creating what we call reality. I write an entire chapter in the book on levels of conscious awareness, provide some framework to recognize where we're at in our conscious evolutionary path so that we can awaken more fully and really return to this source that we are. Language is always creating what we call reality. And so for myself, I've chosen to remove or attempt to remove at least 6 words from my vocabulary because those words I recognize kept me living in a dualistic world of right and wrong. Well, those are, and my words are right and wrong, good and bad, should and must.
Oh.
And so those words are words that when I hear myself saying them or thinking them, I invite myself to open up to a greater possibility rather than being stuck with those limiting words.
Say those words one more time.
Right and wrong, good and bad, should and must.
All right. Everybody, we got that down? All right. So we're going to try and do this, even if you try it for a day, just to see how many times you might say something, use those words. See if you can change it up the next day without saying those words at all.
Absolutely.
So TJ, was there some sort of a large epiphany that happened or event that you went, I'm going to write Conscious Being?
Well, you know, yes. My life experience really has brought me to write the book. And at some point I recognized that it was something that I was going to say that I must do, but I realized that's one of the words I removed from my vocabulary.
Nice.
It felt like a need. It felt like something that I knew was my calling. I had some experiences in my life that led me to a really dark place, honestly, Lisa, and that was I had come into a spiritual teaching that was all about manifestation and all about using affirmations to manifest my best life. And what happened for me, and I'm only speaking for myself because I know this isn't true of everyone who's done these teachings or tried these, I was filtering all of that through my ego. So in other words, I still believed there was something inherently wrong with me or broken about me. Mm. And I thought if I could create the perfect job, the perfect partner, the perfect house, and the car, I would be okay. Now, you know, we might call that the American dream, right?
Yeah,
we're so accustomed to externally focusing that this may seem quite normal for people, but what happened for me is I kept having an inner knowing. So I used the affirmations, and I was able to create a thriving business and a great house and a great partner and a car and everything that I thought was going to bring me happiness. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, it wasn't working because I hadn't done the inner work, right? I hadn't cleared out those stories. So I was still operating with there's something wrong with me. And so when I achieved more, I just wanted more. So I was in this endless cycle of wanting and desire, and it was never enough. And so when I had the inner calling and the inner knowing to become a spiritual teacher, a minister, a spiritual author, which started as this really small voice, which I promptly pushed down.
Of course you did.
And it kept getting louder and louder until one day I said yes. And when I said yes, all of those things I'd created in my external world began to collapse, only because I'd created them on such a shaky foundation. So that really began my journey. Obviously, there's a lot more I could say about that, but that's what really started me on this path.
Well, and I want everyone to understand, I mean, you just heard TJ say, I pushed it down, I pushed it away. You know, we're going to keep getting those little tiny voices in our head that trying to lead us to being the best we can be, to doing the best we can do. And you are going to resist it, right, TJ?
Well, yeah, because
for whatever reason, getting in touch with our calling seems scary for most people.
Yeah.
And I think that that's because we've created this dense ego that believes that we have to have things looking a certain way or that we have to achieve, we have to create more. And so listening to that subtler intuition is something that most of us are not really, we're not trained to do, and it's not our normal way of being.
Yeah, because our, you talked a little bit before about our true nature, and that is that place of what? Peace, love, acceptance, joy.
Yes. Peace, love, acceptance, joy, connection, oneness, that state again that reminds us of how we were in the world as little children. You know, that innocence, that absolute curiosity and presence in life.
And, you know, it's how you react to stuff as well, because if you are in a conscious state of being and you're awakened and you're grounded, when big things happen, it doesn't mean you're never going to get sad again or you're never going to feel out of sorts. It just means you will be better equipped to deal with it.
That is absolutely right. And what I had this big awakening experience that happened in 2006. So I had this calling in about late 2004, early 2005, and I said yes to this calling in 2005, and then things started collapsing, and I lost everything I owned. And in 2006, in the fall of 2006, I was in India, and I had a profound spiritual experience where my ego did feel like it was stripped away. And that lasted for a couple of days for me. What happened was, though, my ego did come back. I didn't, you know, have this permanent awakened state where I was always back in that essential nature.
Right.
But what shifted for me was I knew that was the truth of who I am. And I'm able to witness my ego now, witness my thoughts, witness those stories. So in that way, I did have a permanent shift. It's just not what I thought it was going to be. I thought it would mean that I would never have sadness again. I would never have fear. I would never have the human experience. And quite the opposite of that has actually been my true experience of this.
Mm-hmm. So everybody, how about we start our shift today? We've been speaking to TJ Woodward, author of Conscious Being, Awakening to Your True Nature, and you can look on tjwoodward.com, a great way to find out more about TJ and also about the book as well. Well, we have come to the point of the show that we'd like to call the RL3, and TJ has graciously agreed to answer whatever question I throw at him.
Oh, that's great. It's exciting.
He's like, oh, dear.
Spontaneity of life.
What did I agree to? All right, TJ, here's your first question. If okay. money were no object, what kind of party would you throw and where?
Wow. If money were no object, I would throw the biggest party that I could imagine in Varanasi, India, because that's where I had my incredible awakening experience.
Awesome.
And I would invite everyone that I know that wants to live a more connected, loving, open-hearted life.
Oh my gosh. Can we dance and sing too?
Absolutely.
It's got to be part of it. I love it. Okay, question number two. What fashion trend you followed was very cool then, but now looks ridiculous?
I'm going to say everything that happened in the 1980s.
Oh, yeah. Because now we're going to go around the room here, TJ, because Remy, my producer, had a few good ones. Remy, what about you?
Yeah, did you ever have a flock of seagulls haircut? Oh,
yeah.
The best. You know, big waterfall up one side and down the other.
And then goodness knows, I wish I didn't have a bunch of pictures with me in shoulder pads. Okay.
That's right.
That could go away anytime and I'd be all right with it. All right.
We all had the 80s as the commonality of our theme.
I know we do. But you know what? Love the 80s. Love that I, you know, got to experience what it was like around then. All right. So here's your third and final question. And we love to find out what your fantasy name is. And it is just the first pet you ever had in the street you grew up on. And after you give us your fantasy name, then you think farther into fantasy and say, what would that person do as an occupation? So what is your fantasy name?
So tell me again. It's my
first pet
name.
So what's that?
That's Misty.
Misty. And then what is the street you grew up on?
Oh my gosh. Misty McDowell. How's that?
Misty.
And I think if we really, all of us, hear the name Misty McDowell, it's clear what she would be doing for a living.
Oh.
I don't even have to say it.
Snap. We should play some music right here or something that would let everybody.
Yeah,
all right, Misty. Well, it has been such a joy to have you on the show. And I encourage everybody to go to tjwoodward.com, check out Conscious Being, and, you know, start taking those words out of your vocabulary and see how things change. Thank you so much, TJ, for being with us.
Thank you, Lisa. It's truly an honor and really a fun time being with you.
Oh, thanks so much.